Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're talking about wheels in the sky and things that go bump in the night and all sorts of conspiracies with best-selling author Jim Marrs, author of Alien Agenda, author of Crossfire, Psi Spies, and a whole bunch more. Jim, while we're waiting for calls to start in, I wanted to, before we leave the JFK thing, just want to tell you that one of the things that always stuck in my head, and it's in the movie too, is the scene where this woman is driving in a car and she's thrown out on the side of the road. And I remember from your book, Crossfire, that she was a real person. There was a real witness who said, I was going to Dallas with these two guys. They said it was our mission to kill JFK, or they had something to do with the assassination plot. And she told this to police a couple days before JFK was killed, right?
Yes, her name was Rose Sheremy. She also had worked for Jack Ruby, which ties him into the whole thing. And you're absolutely right. The House Select Committee on Assassinations actually did a whole little appendix on this woman, and they went and interviewed everybody at the hospitals there in Louisiana, the police, state police officials, and everybody involved. And she was trying to warn people that Kennedy was going to be killed in Dallas several days before it happened. Same thing, I interviewed a lawyer who had been in Jack Ruby's club and who saw a young man come in and sit in a booth with Jack Ruby several weeks before the assassination. And he was over there representing one of Ruby's clients, and he overheard the conversation, and it was, Lee, what are you doing back in town? I thought you were in New Orleans. And they went on and on about an assassination plot. And this attorney actually filed a report prior to the assassination placing Oswald and Ruby together. Talking about this conversation after the assassination, and they showed pictures of Lee Oswald, who had been in New Orleans, and he said that's the fellow that was talking to Jack Ruby. So we could spend a whole program talking about the instances of people who put Oswald and Ruby together. General Walker, Edwin Walker, once even told me that. And as Walker said, they're going to have to start all over just on the basis of the fact that Ruby and Oswald knew each other prior to the assassination.
We could also spend a whole program on all the people who died, all the people who were witnesses to one part of it or another who died, some of them from natural causes or supposedly natural causes, but a lot of them from causes that decidedly were not natural.
That's true. One important witness named Morrill was a biker, and they found him outside of Dallas with his motorcycle standing up on the kickstand, and he's lying beside it with his neck broken, and they ruled it a motorcycle accident. Picture this. He skids over, he breaks his neck, he gets up, he puts the motorcycle up on his kickstand, then he lays down and dies. Give me a break.
This is a personal interest sort of about Jack Ruby, but his Las Vegas connections. I've looked into some of those in the past, and Jack Ruby did have some. Did you come across any of those that you recall?
Oh, yes. Yes, very definitely. In fact, one of there was a very well-known, wealthy man in Fort Worth who owned the newspaper there, and he made frequent trips to Las Vegas, and he had hired a woman to be his daycare sitter for his young children. That was Marguerite Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald's mother, and just about 2 weeks or 3 weeks prior to the assassination, this man made a trip to Las Vegas, came back, and would not even talk to Marguerite Oswald, simply left her a note that said, your services are no longer required. And 2 weeks later, her son's charged with killing the president. There were a lot of people that knew what was going to go on.
Essentially, you believe that Oswald thought he was working for the government as an agent or something like that. Our government.
Well, that's what his mother always told me. She said, my son is employed by the government. And, of course, again, we could spend a whole program talking about all of the connections between Lee Oswald and the government. I think the only thing to say there is that a very prominent and distinguished military historian, John Newman, has published a book called Oswald and the CIA. And in there, based on internal CIA message traffic, only made public after the Oliver Stone movie, he conclusively shows that the CIA was using Lee Harvey Oswald operationally prior to the assassination. And one of these days, the truth will come out, and we'll find that Osama bin Laden was being used by the CIA prior to 9/11.
We'll have you back on the show for that, a whole show for that. But have you heard of this guy in Canada who says he's JFK's love child, wants some, is asking for, in the pages of Canadian newspapers, asking for Kennedy DNA?
Who does he claim his mother is?
That I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know that one.
I don't either. That's, you know, there's, again, keep in mind that the name of the game is obfuscation, okay? You just throw so many theories and so many things like this out there that it just confuses the issue to the point to where hardly anybody wants to deal with it.
Are you familiar with Vincent Bugliosi's book on the assassination?
Oh, yes, yes. I just had to put that one down quickly because I got a Charlie horse in my arm. It's 1,700 pages. He should have changed the title. It should have been entitled Reclaiming the Warren Commission. George, that just forget it, okay? It's nothing but the same old prosecutorial brief against Oswald with no consideration being given to the massive amount of information that could show his innocence or show that he was, as he himself said, was set up to be the patsy in the assassination. Bugliosi even devotes 2.5 pages to a made-up conversation between some imaginary mafia guy named Vito and Jack Ruby, which, you know, it, by his own admission, never took place. You know, how's that advance the case?
Okay, we're going to come back, take a short break, come back and take some viewer listener calls. So stick around. Jim Marsh, hanging in there?
I'm hanging.
All right, we'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We have some time left with Jim Marsh, best-selling author, and we're going to go to the phones now. First to our East of the Rockies line, Jimmy in Brooklyn. What's on your mind?
Hi. JFK, President Kennedy, was constantly warning Martin Luther King about his communist advisors around him, and then JFK gets killed by a communist. Now, I know a lot of people don't want to believe that, but there's a common denominator between Martin Luther King and Lee Harvey Oswald. One of them is Carl Braden, who's the head of the Department of Agitation and Propaganda, because Lee Harvey Oswald was one of the heads of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, and that's a communist-controlled group, and Martin Luther King attended the Highlander Folk School. Both of these groups had contact with Carl Braden, who was the head of the Department of Agitation and Propaganda.
The Department of Agitation and Propaganda, where's that at?
That's for the U.S. Communist Party, Carl Braden. And he also got, Carl Braden got convicted in 1956, I believe it was, for blowing up a black home in Louisville, Kentucky. The Communist Party also trained Sam Bowers, the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, who was made famous because of the movie Mississippi Burning. The goal was to stir up race trouble in America, to discredit America in the eyes of Africa as the Soviets were making their moves on Africa.
Hey, Jimmy, do you have a question? Do you have a question for the guest?
Well, I just think the guest is helping promote the idea of world government and some of the stances he's taken, pushing the idea of global warming when that's already being debunked, because the people who are pushing global warming want global solutions, which means global government and global control, and I think that's pretty dangerous.
Okay. Jim?
Well, I think the caller needs to do a little bit more digging. He'll find out that Oswald himself said he was not a communist, he was a Marxist, and he was carefully schooled because he was trained to infiltrate communist activities. His activities in New Orleans was to try to draw out pro-Castro communists. He was working for the government. The whole thing was an early COINTELPRO, and I've never said there's no global warming, okay? But by the way, just for the caller's benefit and for everybody's listening, the problem's not with your SUV. The problem is solar system-wide warming. The polar caps on Mars are melting. The outer planets are becoming more iridescent because they're heating up. The sun is erratic. This is something that whatever's going on, it's impacting the entire solar system, not just the Earth.
And I guess maybe, you know, if you want to debate whether humans are causing global warming on Earth, you could say that at worst or at best, we're not helping anything with it.
Well, obviously we have some problems with pollution and environmental degradation. But so I'm not saying that we should just keep you know, rollicking merrily along and partying and destroying the earth. But the caller is right about the fact that this thing about global warming, and it's all because we're driving cars, that's just being used as a control mechanism.
And okay. All right. We're going to go to our first-time caller list, Carl in Ann Arbor, Michigan. What are you doing?
Good show, guys. Mr. Martyrs, I've just got a couple of comments, and then I have a question for you. First of all, I think the whole key to this thing, if anybody knows anything about high-powered rifles and scopes, there's two words that'll prove to everybody that Oswald couldn't have done this by himself. The two words are moving target. Oswald was a sharpshooter with stationary targets in the Marines, not moving targets. That's how they train.
Right, and let me interject quickly that sharp they classified him as a marksman, which is the lowest of the three grades. It's marksman and then sharpshooter and then expert. And
exactly.
When he was about to get out of the Marines, he only qualified as marksman, the lowest grade, by only 2 points. So he was a mediocre to poor shot.
Exactly. And me being involved with the SWAT team here in the Michigan area, I can tell you, when you shoot a high-powered rifle, you have to acquire your picture through a scope, and that's on a stationary target. After the rifle discharges, the recoil will throw your eyes off the target. You then have to reacquire. You have to rack the gun with a bolt-action rifle, then reacquire a sight picture for the second shot. On a moving target, it's nearly impossible to do within that time frame. He could not have done it. And the question I have for you is this.
Well, wait, let me ask you one thing, because you say you're a sniper with a SWAT team?
With a .308 rifle, exactly.
Okay, then I'm sure that you're aware of plunging fire, which means if you fire from a high position to a lower position, gravity has to be taken into consideration, because your bullet will drop lower, a little bit lower than where you're actually aiming. So you have to compensate not only for your windage, but also for this plunging fire. Isn't that correct?
Exactly. That's exactly right. But the bigger issue is a moving target.
That's the big one.
Now, he probably had the rifle rack for the first shot, so he didn't have to. He already had the sight picture acquired. But when he had to rack the rifle for the second shot, he lost his sight picture. He would have to reacquire a sight picture for the second shot through the scope on a moving target.
Right.
That is nearly impossible. It's not even considering the adrenaline that's going through him at the time, because he is shooting at the President of the United States.
Right.
It's impossible for him to make those three shots. The two key words are moving target. And the question I have for you is, why haven't more experts in scope rifle firepower come out and discuss this issue?
Well, they have, but they get short shift in the corporate control media, which does not allow that information to be widely disseminated.
Thanks, Carl. That was excellent. We're going to go to our wild card line, Jeff in Chelsea. Jeff, are you there?
Yes. Very, very simple. I think that the UFO phenomenon, for the most part, is our military technology or some other technology, and I will preface it with two books. One is called Black Helicopters by Jim Keith, which Jim Keith believes in the same thing, that for the most part, the UFOs is just advanced military technology. And also a book called America at the Brink by Thomas Bearden, who's a lieutenant colonel in the Army, who talks about Russian scalar technology and the effect of Russian scalar technology can mimic UFOs.
Okay. I'm very well aware of Jim Keith and his material, the late Jim Keith. And I think that largely I agree with him. I've already said early in the program that I think many of the sightings we're having today are probably secret government test craft. The question, though, is where did they get that technology? And my question to you is, if it's all military, secret military test craft, how do you explain these massive UFO sightings prior to the Wright brothers flying?
Well, in the case of America, and I know where you're coming from, but after World War II, you had Operation Paperclip, and there is a 10% wiggle room, to which is debatable. because
wait a minute, what do you mean by wiggle room? We're talking about 1896 and 1897 when the newspapers were filled with stories of this balloon, cigar-shaped object flying at fantastic speeds across the countryside.
Well, demonic activity.
Demons. Okay.
That's the 10%, which is you do have about 10 to 15% wiggle room, and there is such a thing as demonic activity, which is described in the Bible. So you do have that 15%, but I still think that for the most part, most of it is our technology, and it's from Operation Paperclip. When we brought over the Nazi scientists after World War II, we took ours, the Russians took theirs, and Nikolai Tesla had technology way beyond his time, around the 1900s.
Well, there's a good deal of truth in what you're saying.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff, for that call. You know, I think we can all agree. I mean, most of the people in ufology who've been studying this stuff for a long time, they'll say, you know, you can accept that 90 to 95% of everything that is reported as a UFO can be explained in prosaic terms. I mean, that's a given. Then you add in the fact that there's probably are all kinds of secret aircraft. I know here in Nevada, we have Area 51. It has always been the testing location of choice for advanced weaponry and aircraft, the SR-71, the U-2 and the SR-71 and Have Blue and F-117, all kinds of things like that. So there are advanced aircraft. They do fly around, but that doesn't explain a lot of sightings, as you mentioned, Jim, earlier, not even as far back as 1897, but in the 40s and 50s,
right.
Aircraft doing things that we simply can't do even today.
But George, speaking of Area 51, how are they coming along with the Aurora?
Well, I wish I knew. I mean, I keep asking them to let me in out there, and they're just not going along with that.
And my follow-up question is, why in the world did they name it the Aurora, which just happens to be the name of the Texas town where something crashed in 1897 and all the reports of the airship stopped?
That's true. That's right. What a coincidence. You think it's related?
Yes, I think it is. But because just like the Apollo missions early on, it was clearly connected to the Orion and to the Osiris Egyptology or Egyptian mythology. And yeah, there's something going on. There are people within the agencies and the groups that are pushing all this that have a vast understanding and knowledge of human history.
You've seen the statements made by Ben Rich, the late Ben Rich of Lockheed, who's talked about advanced aircraft and the technology that we have, and we have the ability to go to the stars, but it'll never be let out. Do you buy that? Do you believe that he was accurately quoted?
Yes, I think that's pretty accurate. That goes back to what I said earlier in the program, in that the controllers, the wealthy elite who are hoping to control this planet and certainly trying, they really don't care if we know there's other worlds out there. They just do not want to give up their monopolies over energy and pharmaceuticals and telecommunications and transportation.
Jim Mars, hang on. We've got a lot of callers waiting to talk to you, and we'll be right back with more of Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. We're in the home stretch with Jim Mars. We could probably fill another couple of hours with all the folks we got holding on the phone. So we're talking about all sorts of conspiracies, including the mother of all conspiracies, the JFK assassination, the story that won't go away, the story that the world public, the American public in particular, won't buy. One of the things we're going to ask Jim Mars about when we come back is about the three tramps. You've all seen that photo of the three guys who were dressed kind of weird and picked up on the street of Dallas, and one of those guys is suspected of being involved in the murder, but also is believed to be the father of a famous actor. When we come back, we're going to get into that. We're taking a short break. We'll be right back with Jim Mars on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, we're talking about the JFK assassination, and I just mentioned in the tease leading up to this to the issue of the three tramps. Do you believe that those three guys who were picked up wearing kind of odd shoes for their circumstances were involved in the assassination? And do you believe that one of them was, in fact, Charles Harrelson, the father of actor Woody Harrelson?
Well, I cover that in my book, Crossfire. In fact, I have a whole little section called The Role of Hitman Harrelson. The reason you can call him the hitman is because he is a convicted assassin.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay, and at the time, the tall tramp was estimated to be between 25 and 30 years old, and in 1963, Charles Harrelson would have been 25. It fits right in there. There have been photographic analysis done that shows, based on a wrinkle that goes around his neck, the size of his ear, shape of his ear, and other facial features, there's very compelling evidence that Charles Harrelson may have been one of the so-called three tramps that were pulled off a boxcar trying to leave the area and then marched back through Dealey Plaza some short time after the Kennedy assassination. But now there's also this intriguing story that it was a Dallas News story where a reporter from the Dallas News tried to interview Harrelson when he was in jail, and he said, I can't talk to you now, he said, because they're bugging my cell. And a few months later, sure enough, it came out that the authorities were indeed had a microphone in his cell. But he told this reporter, he said, so I can't talk now, he said, but when I get out of here and I'm free to talk, he said, I'll give you the biggest story you ever got. And the reporter said, well, what is it? And he said, well, I can't talk. He said, but you just remember this. November the 22nd, 1963.
Well, that's a pretty big hint. And, of course, I have a Las Vegas connection to that, of course, because Charles Harrelson was hired by a guy named Jimmy Shagra, a Texan who was a Las Vegas high roller who got into trouble for smuggling drugs and had Harrelson, allegedly, had Harrelson assassinated.
Well, he was convicted of it. Wasn't allegedly. Well, he apparently killed Judge Wood.
Yeah, he killed Judge Woods. The alleged part is that whether or not Shagra hired him to do it. Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Anyway, there was an ulterior motive for me bringing that up. And we're going to go to our West of the Rockies line, John in Palm Springs, who I think has some sort of a connection to Lee Harvey Oswald. John, you there?
Yeah, I appreciate you taking my call because I have something to add. I was born and raised in New Orleans. I was in that Civil Air Patrol squadron at the New Orleans Lakefront Airport, the same one that Oswald came out of. Mm-hmm. And that was about a year or so before me and my guys. But Oswald and me and my guys were both under the senior command as cadets of David Ferry. David Ferry was the senior commander of that squadron, Civil Air Patrol, when we were in there.
Right. By the way, let me point out that David Ferry was the character played by Joe Pesci in the movie JFK.
Terribly portrayed, because he wasn't that flighty and nervous. He could have knocked you down if you cornered him.
And he's a very brilliant man, wasn't he?
Oh, I know that very well. He was a master hypnotist. I knew him personally, and also I can connect him and Jack Ruby, and my buddy and I took the drill team before the deed was done in Dallas, but the very beginning of the 60s, into Dallas, and a phone number was pressed into this senior cadet that went along with us, and it was Jack Ruby's phone number. Dave said, here, while y'all are in Dallas, if you need anything, here's a phone number. It was Jack Ruby's phone number.
Right.
Holy cow.
Because he ran the one of the only after-hours clubs.
Oh, I know it well,
Dallas.
The cellar.
Yeah.
We talk about a topless place. That was also a bottomless place after a certain hour at night, because when we lived in Dallas in 67, we used to go over there.
Right.
But also, I've held in my hand a picture out of a bivouac that has Oswald and Ferry in it at the same time. And Oswald's biography in the computers skipped from high school to Marines. We had a couple of Marines training us in hand-to-hand and warfare when we went north of the lake under Dave's command. There's no other squadron in the whole world that would have two Marines training high school age kids.
Right.
Although in the movie was portrayed, I'm sure the adult mercenaries and such, but the cadet age, me and my guys were taken maybe on the weekends. But,
well, then, that fits in very, very tightly. Let me run this by you and get your take on this. Marguerite Oswald, Lee's mother, once told me that when he was in junior high school, He showed up after school one day with a military officer. And the military officer told his mother, Marguerite Oswald, said, Lee is a bright boy. He's a self-starter. He can operate independently. He's the very type of guy we need. And they were basically kind of hustling him to go into the service, even in junior high school. Does that sound correct to you?
Yeah, and that service might have been a civil war patrol. I think that was a culture dish for Dave. Dave, also, you know, as I said, a master hypnotist, and then the missile sites in Cuba were on his wall in his apartment, and before the rest of the world was privy to it, plus the Jack Ruby connection and the picture that I'm trying to get back from the widow.
Wait a minute. If he had pictures of the Cuban missile sites prior to the missile crisis in the fall of 1962, he could have only gotten that through government intelligence, right?
Well, yeah. I don't know factually. I cannot say factually, but speculatively, there's double agents and then there's triple agents.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
And I would like to get a hold of you sometime. I don't know if you came out here into Palm Springs where I'm years ago on the radio show, but I went to that thing. If you were one of those guys, I have these things to add to this thing, and it's time that it gets out.
Contact me through my website, jimmars.com.
Yeah.
And by the way, while I'm at it, let me put in another plug for Jim Mars Forum on the AboveTopSecret.com. If you want to get into many different forums, many different threads, many different conspiracies with people who know what they're talking about and are not just up there flaming back and forth, AboveTopSecret.com is the place to go.
Yeah, those are good guys. John, thank you very much for that very interesting call, and you guys are going to have to hook up, and I sure hope you keep me in the loop. Thanks very much for that one. We're going to go to our wild card line, Robert in Rhode Island. What's on your mind this morning?
Good evening, gentlemen. Hey, real quick questions. First, where is the best place to get the resources for training on that remote viewing outside of joining the military? Second, what's your read, Mr. Mars, on William Cooper's assessment that it was the limo driver of Kennedy's that got the final shot in and was helped with naval intelligence?
Right.
Thirdly, real quick, have you come up with any information that might prove that the possibility that Reagan somehow started to contract Alzheimer's after his UN address in which he acknowledged the possibility of UFO.
Well, there's a mouthful. Thank you, Robert.
Oh, boy.
There's
another whole program. Let me back into that. First off, about Reagan, yes, I've heard that. I think it is true that, in fact, actually it's true that they didn't announce that he had, make public that he had Alzheimer's until he was out of office. There is some evidence that he was having some problems even before he left office. Then number two is to the driver. That's just hogwash. Sorry, folks, that did not happen. Okay, and I don't mean to impugn the dead here, but Bill Cooper was. I contacted him myself personally, and so did many others, and we told him and tried to explain to him and show him. In fact, the first researcher, Lars Hansen, who first came up with that theory later, after he looked at all the evidence and saw the improved Zapruder film frame by frame, he realized that that was not the case, and so he repudiated. He said, no, that didn't happen. Unfortunately, William Cooper just kept pushing that thing until his death, I suppose. And so, it's created a lot of confusion out there. It did not happen, period, okay? End of story. Now, as to where you go to get remote viewing training, that's a really good question, and that's going to have to be a highly individualistic effort. I would say go on the Internet and look up any number of these former military remote viewers who offer various styles and various means of doing the remote viewing, but be very careful because there's a lot of people out there who claim to be remote viewers or who claim to give remote viewing lessons, and they may or may not be qualified to do that. I know when I first was introduced to the SAS spies and got to working with them, I told them right then, I said, fellas, I can see what's going to happen. Once the story of remote viewing gets out to the public, where once you had Madam Hand palm reading, now you're going to have Madam Hand remote viewer. George, that's kind of happened, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. You got some that are good, and I guess some that are not very good at it.
That's right. So I think the best thing I could tell your audience is to try to search out one of the people that was involved in the U.S. government's military remote viewing program. Many of those are teaching courses, and then you just pick the one that you think would suit your style.
Hey, along those lines, Jim, there's a guy named Ed Dames who's very famous and very much connected to that topic, and somebody had asked me to ask you this question. He's been on this show a lot of times. It seems like every time I've heard him, the end of the world is coming.
I kind of declined to get into personalities.
Sure.
But in this case, you have a fellow who told us that Martians were hibernating under the desert of New Mexico, and told a national publication in early 95 that in the summer of 95 they were going to surface and make contact. And he made the statement that if this doesn't happen, I'm getting out of this whole business, and of course neither happened. And of course that's the same fellow who tells us that something was coming along following the Hale-Bopp comet that was full of pathogens and that we were all going to be dead within 6 or 8 months, and that didn't happen either. So again, buyer beware.
Okay, we're going to go to our wild card line. David in Palmdale has a question. What's on your mind this morning, David?
Hi there. Actually, Palmdale, California, Plant 42, Skunk Works, all that good stuff. We see nice stuff flying out here all the time.
Oh, yeah. You don't 44. Work there.
What's that?
You don't work there, do you?
No. It's not. Here's that brings me into my question. I have a lot of friends who do. In fact, a good friend who's been there a long time. And, it's one of those that he can't talk about his job. But the people I know are working in there. Something's going down. They're getting stressed. He was in tears today saying, I wish I could tell you. I just want to be a burger flipper. I mean, Jim, what do you think's going on? There's something going on in that facet of the government.
Right.
Where these guys are getting stressed. And I feel as if he's one of the guys holding it together, helping to actually hold it together.
Well, of course, I don't have any special insight, so I can only speculate like you can, but I think that this may fall under what I mentioned earlier in the program about the fact that the decision has been made for us that we're going to have to start coming clean and coming out with more serious, incredible UFO information because of all of the increased sightings all around the world. And these guys who've operated there at Area 51 with pretty much total secrecy over all these years, the fact that this is going to start coming out and that they may have to redouble their efforts, they have to figure out a way to stop them or at least detect them, you could see where that would put additional stress on them in that work situation.
Okay, thanks for the call. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Walt has a JFK question, I believe. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing tonight?
Okay. Howdy.
My question for Mr. Mars is, since I had a 6.5 Italian carbine, I wanted to know if he observed that when you fire around in that, when you hit the bolt handle to extract the round, it also cocks the bolt, which adds a lot of extra pressure to it. So when you hit that handle to bring it up to extract the round and cock it at the same time, you really got to smack that handle.
I do have one of those carbines, and you're absolutely right.
Okay, good.
It is not a smooth operating weapon. In fact, are you aware that I know that it's an Italian war rifle. It was made during World War II by the Italians, and the Italians nicknamed that Mannlicher Carcano the humane weapon because it was notoriously inaccurate. And
all
not
right.
only that, but even if you go look deep in the Warren Commission, you'll find that they had to put three metal shims, and they very thoughtfully showed us a picture of the three metal shims that they had to put under the telescopic sight of Oswald's rifle to make it accurate enough to test.
Wow. thanks, Walt.
That's stuff you've never been told.
Appreciate that, Walt. We're going to go to our wild card line. John in Long Island, what's on your mind?
Hello, George. Hello, Jim. I just want to comment on the UFO hunters. It just seems that they're actually using old cases. And why don't they travel, take their expensive equipment to Mexico City, which literally there's sightings every day there, and then try to analyze
whole flights of them, right?
Excuse me?
I said whole flights of UFOs seen down in Mexico City.
Oh, that's the hot spot of the whole world for UFOs. I can't believe they're not there.
Right. Well, oh, boy. This gets into the corporate control media who will only allow certain things, and you can only investigate up to a certain point. George Knapp and I have, you know, we've been in the middle of this for years. You can talk about some things, but you can't talk about others. You can talk about some things, but you can only talk about them to a certain point. And I assure you that when you go back and you find out that the same five media corporations own everything you see and hear, including those cable channels, including the networks, including newspapers, magazines, billboards, it's amazing we're getting any information out at all.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Jim, we got a minute or so left, maybe 2 minutes. I'd like to know, are you an optimistic guy? I mean, considering the dark stuff that you deal with and the conspiracies, you're optimistic?
Yeah, pretty much. That's why, you find a disproportionate number of drunks and people with alcohol problems and drug problems among lawyers, doctors, police officers, because they deal with the reality of life, and reporters also. But I've always kind of taken an optimistic look, and also you have to take a look at the humorous side of things. You know, folks, everything may seem like it's gloom and doom, and it probably is, but it's a big joke. You know, we're all going to this life is not the end all. You're going to keep going. You're going to go do something else. And the other thing is that I am optimistic. I really think that within most of our lifetimes, we're going to see a truly kinder and gentler United States, or world anyway.